And we're back. Thanks for staying tuned to WVFF 97.7 FM and now more true crime in the Lowcountry.
I did a show with a YouTuber, Excited Utterance. Her name is Hella. She's out of New Zealand. Does a great job. And she had a guest on that is a guy. He read him off. We sat and went through the letters and emails that he's received. There's one woman who is really obsessed with him. I mean,
said that him because the dating pool is that pathetic. I mean, how is it that you get to? I want to date a convicted killer who's in jail for life. I mean, I don't see a lot of future for that relationship. He's never coming to Thanksgiving dinner.
That's the thing. I don't know what it's called. There's got to be a name for it. But men and women, mainly women, who go after, you know, people who are in prison for serious crimes. That's a thing.
So what did they say? I saw you on Court TV, and that look in your eyes. I'm mesmerized. I mean, I don't get.
Yeah, things like that. I miss, you know, things. If you and I were together. All of the things I would do to you, kind of thing. You're like, oh, what? And, you know, I just, good evening, good night, I miss you, weird stuff.
And you find out, and because it's written in anonymity, you find out it's a 350-pound, 6'4" guy that's writing these letters to him.
Yeah.
No, but somebody married Ted Bundy, I think, while he was in prison down in Florida.
Really? Were you jealous?
Yeah.
Elaine, were you jealous?
No, will you stop? I danced with Ted Bundy, and so we talked about that. So no, I was not jealous. No. But he at least was.
Did he invite you to be Thanksgiving dinner?
No, we're going to get right over the line of good taste here in a second, because he did kill my friend. He killed Susan Elaine Rancourt and raped her and beheaded her. So he wasn't particularly good. But anyway, but I brought it up. So I'm not, trust me, I shouldn't joke about it, but it did come up. Okay, so, but here's my thought. Ted Bundy actually was an attractive man. I mean, he was good looking. That sounds horrible, but he was. And he was charismatic. And even Ann Wool is a very famous author who wrote a book about him called, I think, The Stranger Beside Me or something. But Ted Bundy had worked in a crisis call line in Seattle. So, you know, women that had been raped or women that were vulnerable or women that were suicidal would call in, and he was the guy answering the calls. And then he was an up-and-coming Republican, actually. And so our Republican governor, Dan Evans, actually wrote a recommendation for him to law school. And he attended the University of Washington. In fact, I took classes from people like Dr. Pember. In fact, because you have a degree in media, you might remember Dr. Pember in mass media law. Dr. Pember remembers Ted Bundy in his class. A lot of the professors did. But he was a very charismatic guy. But Alec Murdoch, I think he's a sympathetic person. I think he loved Paul and Maggie. But I don't see falling in love with him. But I don't know, you know. Who am I to say? I don't know. So you guys did a whole show on the love letters he gives?
We did. Actually, we did, I think, two shows.
Oh, God.
Holy cow. Do they send him gifts? And are they like, you know, people throwing stuff? Like, remember Tom Jones? His fans would throw garments, undergarments. Do people send Alec Murdoch stuff?
That we didn't go over. I don't think you can.
Does he respond to them? I guess that's the bigger question.
No. He has not.
He has not. Do we know?
Well, I think Jim should get an interview with Alec. In fact, would you tell us if you were working on it? Well, I think you are working on it. Would you tell us if you'd gotten it? No, not until you publish the book, right?
Right. But I will tell you this. You can have written correspondence in South Carolina. You can have written correspondence between yourself, a reporter, and an inmate, and you write the questions, they write you back. You cannot have recorded conversations between you and an inmate. That's South Carolina That's a South Carolina Department of Corrections policy. In fact, I think that, I don't know if it's ACLU or somebody just took them to court in federal court to try to get that overturned. And the federal court, I think it was just yesterday, the day before, threw that case out and allowed the current policy by the South Carolina Department of Corrections to continue. Which is interesting.
What's the basis for the policy? I think it's that they don't want criminals to benefit financially from their crimes, maybe, so they don't want them to be. What is the basis for the policy?
I'm sure there's more to it than what I'm going to tell you, but it's that, and it's also they don't want victims to have to relive listening to, you know, whomever it is, sit there on, you know, ABC and have to listen to it on national news. They don't want them to go through that, and I can appreciate that. But they you know, I think they argued the floor to get rid of it was First Amendment rights. However,
you lose those when you're a felon
inside prison. Yeah. Inside a prison where it's not a public inside a prison. It's a controlled environment which the state controls. So First Amendment rights there don't apply.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there's another reason not to commit crimes.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those that are morally bankrupt, we have consequences. All right. I mean, you know, that's ironic. It's ironic. You know what I mean? If people are morally bankrupt, all right. Well, another reason for them not to commit a crime is the consequence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, God help us.
But I don't know if it's a deterrent or not. But weren't we talking about caning in Singapore?
Oh,
they don't
yeah.
have crime, so much crime in Singapore because the penalties are so harsh and they're enforced.
Oh, man. That's I'm going to tell you something. Singapore is not really.
It's cracked up to be. We're not moving there. I'll cancel my tickets.
Yeah, cancel your tickets to Singapore or make it round trip. But if you made it round trip, it would probably be a waste of half of the airfare because they would never let you out. You know.
Is that because of that swear jar thing?
Oh, God. Jim.
Yeah.
Listen, go and hit up Elaine's swear jar because it must be about $1,500 in there right now.
Doing so well.
There was a thing, and I'm gonna, what do you call it? I'm gonna use some euphemistic terms here.
Okay.
There was a term. You said something about you were so mad. Linus? You were so mad at somebody that you would urinate on their corpse. You know, but you didn't use those terms, and. I think that got you probably about $750 in a swear jar right there.
I have to,
you know, and I said, and my what do you call it? And my response to that is always, oh yes, and kick their bones around the street. Now I can say that, kick their bones around the street, but you used terms that were unacceptable to.
From a few good men. I don't remember this. You know, I hate to say this, but. At some point, it almost comes so easily, you don't realize you said it. And that's not a good thing. Obviously, you know, I've got to go say a few Hail Marys and whatever for that. But,
well,
I apologize.
We're dragging Jim into the weeds. You know, it turned out where it was a discussion about the Murdoch trial to, hey, let's hang out and have a beer.
Well, so Jim, what's going on? You're doing a book signing, aren't you?
We're getting one planned. Okay. We'll see.
You're getting one planned and avoiding two others. I have a couple of offers here, and I'm waiting to hear from you.
Well, it's certainly not me, and I said this before, and I'll say it again. What's interesting about Myra is, you know, she's portrayed, including by Becky Hill, as being very talkative. and a person who, you know, was talking about the trial to people and very just talkative. And I can tell you for a fact, she is not very talkative. And that's not a diss on her whatsoever. That's just how she is as a person. She's a very quiet person, keeps to herself. And you have to ask very open-ended questions to her. You're going to get a very yes and no kind of answer. That's just the type of person she is. She's a wonderful individual. She's just a very quiet, keep to herself person, which is fine. But, you know, you know, it's like going out and getting beat 50 to nothing and then going out and saying one. Well, that's not the facts. I don't know where these people are getting these facts from. She's not like this very talkative person. But Becky Hill, at least in the evidentiary hearing, tried to portray her as. And they're trying to portray her as that.
Jim, who else said that? Remember the verbatim transcript of those January 2022 conversation, the text between Sarah Capelli and Mark Tinsley that are a matter of public record because they've been filed in the 392 case. He says Sarah Capelli had, no, in the transcript of the hearing before Bentley Price, he describes Sarah Capelli as having the worst diarrhea of the mouth of anybody he's ever talked to. And that wasn't true. But that's odd, now that I think of it, that Becky Hill is doing that same kind of a character assassination of Myra that also isn't true. So maybe that's a way that some people strategize deflecting. Because, you know, I went back and I listened
to Becky. Or maybe the same person's doing all the strategy.
Well, it's obvious. To me, it's an odd similarity that, you know, I have a lot of conversations with a lot of people all day, every day. And we don't have those kinds of similarities. A similarity like that, where you're using it in the same context to discredit somebody because you don't like what they're saying. So you discredit them, you disparage them from the get-go with those kinds of comments. That's an odd similarity that I hadn't picked up on when I read the book. But yeah, Becky Hill does describe Myra that way, and that doesn't seem to be appropriate. And Sarah Capelli is not. That doesn't seem to be an accurate description of her at all.
Yeah, in the context, in evidentiary hearing, Dick Arpulian was cross-examining her, and he was trying to get her to say that she pulled her into an office and she talked to her, which Becky was not going to go down and do that. She said that she grabbed her with the bailiff. Of course, they didn't bring the bailiff in to say that happened, but she was just talking as they were walking down the hall to Judge Newman's office,
right,
and
that
right. She was just spewing all this information out.
That must have been one long hallway, by the way. Did you think?
Long hallway. I've been in that courthouse. It's not very big. I've taken a tour of it. It may look big from the outside, but when you're walking down those old halls, it's very small.
Well, for what she's attributing, you know, the things that Becky is saying happened in this conversation, it would have to have almost been a 2-hour walk. I mean, because she's got a lot of content there that she's saying occurred then, and the reason Becky is saying that is so that she can dispute that she ever took Myra into a room and had a conversation, which Myra asserts she did. So, wow. But you know, it gets back to this, just a general truth. Liars lie. They just do. It's a stable trait. So when you lie, you lie, which is why I think people that commit perjury, I don't think you should necessarily ever believe them, period, frankly. So, you know, in a way, Alec Murdoch was more honest to say, yes, I did this, yes, I did this, yes, I did this, no, I didn't do that.
Right.
What we saw with Becky Hill in the hearing before Justice Toll is, no, I didn't, no, I didn't, no, I didn't, no, I didn't. And then we sort of backed into a corner, well, okay, yeah, I did. And that's, you know, I don't, it speaks of character that, well, frankly, is lacking as far as I'm concerned. So what's next on your agenda? Are you, are there more media events planned for the book, or are you working on the third book?
The third book's still rattling around in my head. I haven't put anything to paper yet. I'm just kind of, well, I shouldn't say I haven't put anything to paper yet. I've put some outlines together, what I think and want to do. But I'm still trying to promote this book, Juror 785, Because Enough is Enough. She's going to do more. There's some local TV stations that want to talk to her. She's going to wait. She's going to do Critical K. She's going to do Excited Utterance on YouTube. But she's going to wait a little bit and wants to see where this 10 days thing comes with the Supreme Court and what happens with that before she really starts doing a lot more, because she thinks if it gets released, there's going to be a lot more to talk about.
Well, it's going to be easier to talk about it. Then she won't have to be arguing with people with the sort of, you said it, no, I didn't. She did, no, you didn't. Also, are we going to see if the stuff gets released that Newman was involved too? I just don't know a better way to say it. I mean, don't you think that there were questions he should have asked that he didn't? And he should have done a little more investigation than he did.
I think that there was a lot that could have been done differently. But, you know, it's Monday morning quarterbacking, right? At the end of the day, let's put it this way. I think Murdaugh's going to get a new murder trial sometime next year.
Yeah, I do too, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I got to tell you something. Newman's going to get a pass no matter what. You know, that's just the way it's going to be. There's nothing. Nobody's going to question Newman. Nobody's going to look down their nose at him. It's
somebody might write a nasty book about it.
Somebody write a book, but it. I think he is very well protected.
Yeah,
he can't do no wrong. He was, everybody says he was a wonderful judge. He was a fair judge. He was that's their opinion.
See, I didn't agree. It's not my opinion, and I said it at the time. And I think there's a more harsh view of what was going on. But maybe we have to be more distant from the trial to take a look at what was going on, because then you might look at who allowed it to go on. Because I don't think that Newman was necessarily directly involved. I think some other players were directly involved in an agenda to get rid of her. And it was the monetary agenda. You're monetizing the narrative that he's guilty. So you can't have a juror that could hang the jury, basically, or convince jurors to acquit him. But I don't think Newman had that interest, but I think he was incompetent, or he dropped the ball, or however you want to put it. I don't see him as a great judge, not at all.
I don't think I'm qualified to judge the judge. I have an opinion, and the opinion, qualify it, you know.
No, it is kind of water over the dam, to be honest. I agree with that. That it's, what are you going to do? But there certainly is an interesting book to write about that. But there's a lot of interesting books out there. I think there's only two or three books worth reading in all the books that have been published about this, because
I think there is a book in there. It's going to have to be a very technical book and a very legally driven book where your audience is going to be very small.
Yeah.
It's going to be attorneys that want to read it, kind of thing.
And I don't think they read.
That's all they do is read.
No. I think they have a paralegal that summarizes things, and then they read the summary, and that's how we get so far astray and stuff. But it's just my experience. I don't know. Whatever. So anyway, we're getting at the close to the end of the.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes yet. Maybe five, six minutes, and. I don't know. I mean,
so they have 10 days. The South Carolina Supreme Court has 10 days. When did the clock start ticking on that?
September 6th. So they've got till Monday. 10 days is Monday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this, that by Monday, then we will be very energized, because then, you know, the game is afoot and we can go back to, you know, right now we're just in that lull, that waiting period where it's like the dynamite is about to explode. No, somebody has lit the match. We just got to wait for the fuse, you know. So we're just sitting here waiting, which is kind of frustrating. But I think Fitz News is ready to go with it. I know Seton is ready to go with it. Seton is excited about the 392 case, too. And I agree with her. I've always agreed with that. But yeah, so there's a lot. We're just in that lull right before the big storm. So that's kind of my take.
Right.
So, and so it's a perfect time for Myra to be.
Somehow this is all Myra's fault, which I don't understand whatsoever. People are like, this is the justice system. You know, it's like they complain that Dick and Jim are, you know, defending this guy. And how could they? Because it's the oath that they took. They're his attorneys. They're going to do everything they can in their power to defend their client. That's just what life is. I don't understand why people don't understand this.
I don't understand why we give a microphone to people that don't understand that. Because if you don't understand that, there's probably a whole lot of other things you don't understand, like how to walk and chew gum at the same time. And I don't think you're a particularly bright person if you don't understand that everybody's entitled to a defense. Also, Dick and Jim had a long association with Alec, and not just in representing Paul, but they've been friends a long time. So it's sort of natural that they would represent him.
Right. By the way, Dick Harpootlian wrote the foreword for the book, Because Enough is Enough. It's a very short foreword, but he did write the foreword for the book, which I was very glad to accept and place into the book. And it says, A Unique and Disturbing Look Behind the Curtain by Dick Harpootlian.
Oh, my. Well.
Is Dick, Frank, is Dick done now? He lost in the primaries, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did. Is he done? Listen, his wife is still an ambassador, right?
Yeah, just to Slovenia.
Yeah,
or
yeah. So how done can he be? You know, he's going to be politically active. If he doesn't have his name, on the placard on the desk, he'll still control that desk.
Well, when he's
you understand the metaphor, right?
Right.
Yes, but listen, Frank, when he's done, let's do a live stream with him. I think he's an interesting guy.
I could probably get him. We just need to know what we're going to address as far as content.
Smoking dope and evading the draft, going to law school in order to evade the draft. Let's start with that. No, are you not loving it?
No, I'm not going there. I'm not going
there. He went there. I didn't go there. He went there. There's a podcast.
No.
I listened to it. No, he talks about it.
Congratulations on your interview with South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson. I haven't heard it yet. I'm trying to listen to it today.
It's fabulous. It's absolutely fabulous. You listen to it and get back to me. And I want a written report on it, Jim.
Written report. I'll write a book on it.
Don't you owe me something in writing that I'm supposed to do?
I'll have it on Amazon this afternoon.
No. Jim, pay attention. I sent you the text this morning at 4 o'clock.
Yeah,
okay, so,
yeah, yeah. I got it. Yeah.
Okay.
I sent you a text this morning at 4 o'clock.
I get up at 4. Jim sleeps in till. I bet you Jim just got up. He sleeps
in. It's because Elaine goes to bed at 8 o'clock when the sun's still up.
I do. So anyway, but I had something bad happen yesterday that I told you about, Frank. Okay, so I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning because I'm just thinking, gosh, I hate humanity. You know, just people are such bad. You know, they're so nasty and gossipy and petty and whatever. So I've been up since 2. And so at 4, I did something. I had a little project I was doing. And so I sent that off. I sent the text off to Jim. Normally, I won't text anybody at 4 in the morning, but I normally just kind of sleep, so it won't matter. And I just want to make sure he got it because it's just some stupid thing. But it's, you know, something that's sort of marginally important, I suppose. But anyway, yeah. But if you want to get Jim on the phone after 10 o'clock in the morning, and then probably up until midnight at night, right?
Oh, me?
Yeah, it's you.
Yes, you.
Sometimes.
Sometimes you'll wake up at 7 in the morning, send a text, and I think you just roll over and go back to sleep.
Probably, yes.
100% do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, you beat this to death. You beat this to death. We're an hour into this,
yeah.
And we want to don't make life too difficult for Jonathan, because he's got to clip this to an hour to get it to run smoothly. But let's do this again next week. And
let's do Wednesday,
give me,
though, because Wednesday we're going to have something come Monday.
Well, let's look at the schedule and and maybe you want to do it Tuesday while it's fresh in your mind, or Wednesday may be good because you want to digest the reaction of others to it. So, yeah, let's be fluid about it. It can be Tuesday or Wednesday, but I thank you too much. I thank you, Mr. Jim. I thank you, Miss Elaine. And let's end this with the traditional ending.
We're out of here.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, Jim Cascow. Take care now.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, you guys.
And that's all the time we have for now on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We hope you've enjoyed our in-depth coverage of the Murdaugh murder trial so far. Don't worry, we'll be back soon to dive even deeper into the case and bring you more chilling stories from the Lowcountry region. We thank you for listening to Veterans for Freedom Radio, the Truth in Broadcasting Corporation.